This is the WOKV Spotlight on 104.5 WOKV.
It is 9 o'clock, and welcome to a special hour of Jacksonville's Morning News. Rich Jones, Christine Bellino, Benjamin Fridkiss with you. Jacksonville Mayor Donna Deegan joining us in studio. Just a couple of days after $1.92 billion spending proposal was laid at the table of 19 Jacksonville City Council members, this is where kind of the rubber meets the road, if you will, over the next several months. It always ends up being a very busy summertime for the Jacksonville City Council Finance Committee and then ultimately the City Council. But as you said, Mayor, in your statement to City Council, we have to lean in that this is going to be from potential to progress. So as we were talking a moment ago, a budget is a statement of priorities. How Yes. did you prioritize spending and what your vision was and what you promised on the campaign trail leading up to last year and being elected? And how did that all come to bear in this overall $1.92 billion spending plan?
Well, look, a budget is a moral document. You know, it says what our values are as a city. And so we believed very heavily that we needed to invest in public safety, went very heavily toward what we felt were far more fair contracts for police and fire. It's a big city. There's a lot of responsibility. We grew by 17,000 people last year. And so really our ad valorem taxes pretty much go to pay for public safety because we have such a large city. And so we were pleased to be able to do that. So police and fire, big investments this year. Big investments into our underserved neighborhoods. I think there were $150 million worth of CIP projects that go into eight districts.
What's CIP, 8, 9, and 10. For those who don't know?
Capital Improvement Plan. So infrastructure on critical needs in 8, 9, and 10, districts 8, 9, and 10. But we are very, very intentional about making sure that we are going to keep marching toward keeping those broken promises of consolidation, because that's how we have a city that works for everybody. And that was obviously a major goal when I came into office.
So as we look at the law enforcement part, and you actually mentioned taxes, we might as well just get it right out of the way. Are taxes going up as a result of this?
They are not.
And why not, despite the increased spending? To the average person who's hearing this, how come taxes don't go up despite an increase in $165 million?
Well, look, I don't want people to get the idea that we're bringing in less money than the ad valorem taxes increased this year. The money that we got increased, but this is such a nuanced thing. It was about $68 million less than what we were anticipating. And the reason for that was because we had a lot of folks that had their properties reevaluated. Commercial properties primarily that had a lot of vacancies after COVID. So we have a lot of buildings that are at least half empty. Insurance costs have gone way up for commercial properties. And so they asked to have those properties revalued. And so that takes a little while from COVID to now. Those things started to roll through the tax, you know, system. And so they were reevaluated and they came in far lower. So that's what the reframing of what we thought we were going to have. So what we did is we decided to identify several one-time costs that we could take out of the city reserves. And we did that because last year we had such a big year we had extra because of all the money that was coming in from the federal government. By the end of the year, we took $78 million and moved it into reserves, and we're just talking general reserves. And then I personally took $20 million from that and moved it into emergency reserves. So we have targets for both of those things. We are almost double still, even with the money that we're taking out of reserves this year, we still have almost double the amount of money in reserves that is our target. So we have plenty of money in our reserves. We don't want to use that as something that we would use for recurring expenses, but for one-time expenses, it makes sense. So there's not a need to raise taxes. We just need to make sure that we are being fiscally responsible with the dollars that we have. And so what we're doing this year is we have created a number of what we call lean teams that we are evaluating the processes of the city. Our goal is to create a far more efficient city government. We're asking all the city departments to evaluate the way they do things. As you know, we've already streamlined a few things. Of permitting, we've got a new procurement system. We want to make sure we are as efficient as we can be, and by next year, we hope we'll be able to show that we have been able to save the city a whole lot of money.
There was some initial pushback from Finance Committee Chair, former Council President Ron Salem, and a couple of others who were initially a little bit concerned about tapping that emergency.
We didn't tap any emergency funds. No emergency funds were tapped.
So just the
general. There's two pots of money.
Okay.
There is the general reserves and there are emergency reserves. We did not even come close to touching emergency reserves. And in the general reserves, even with this money that we want to take out to pay for these one-time expenses, we still have almost double the amount of money in those reserves that we target. So there is money there to be used for this purpose. So it's not something we'd want to do every year, but I will tell you that 9 out of the last 10 years, we have taken money out of reserves. The only year we didn't do that was last year.
Okay.
So it is a very common practice and something that we hope that after we've been able to implement these lean processes this year, we will not have to look at doing.
And is the assessment of the commercial properties process done so that we're like back at a foundational level, if you will, for those commercial properties?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know how many more are out there to be reevaluated, but I do know that what we were told is that there was a fairly large tranche of them that went through this year. So that my hope is that's where we are. That's my hope is that we're not dealing with that again. But as I said, we have to look at everything with fresh eyes. And that means we have to look at all the processes. We've done that since we came in, and we're just continuing that process. So we're trying to streamline everything. There are places where we need to create more, like we talked about with permitting. We needed more people in permitting. There may be other city departments where we can reduce the amount of manpower that we have there. So right now, we're taking a look at all that to try to make sure we have the most streamlined process we can have.
All right. I'm glad we clarified that point because it does raise some questions about the spending and the increase in how we get to that point. But we were starting about law enforcement. So more officers and
yes.
more vehicles.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about what investment is happening there on top of the new contracts that have just been approved.
That's right. We've approved pretty significant raises for both police and fire. I have to tell you, when I came in, I don't guess last year I had a whole lot of time to look at all that stuff, and plus it wasn't time to negotiate yet. And when they put the salaries in front of me for what we were paying, you know, our police and fire folks, I said, gosh, that's lower than I would have expected, and we need to do better. And so we initially came in with the idea that we wanted to make sure that we paid them a wage that would allow them to make sure they could recruit and retain. And then we were able to also negotiate a return to a defined pension benefit for those folks, because they were very, very intent on saying to me that if they did not have that, they were going to lose officers to other departments. And we just can't have that.
So that's done. And on top of that, more officers who are coming in this
yep.
budget cycle?
When we came in last year, we wanted to add 200 officers over the next 4 years. So what the sheriff has done is he's asked, basically last 2 years, he's asked for an additional 40 officers. They weren't able to really fill those entirely before. And we think that with these new salaries and this new FRS option for police, which won't go into effect until 27, that just the FRS part, the salaries will, but not the FRS. We think they'll be able to retain a lot more of the talent that they'd like to keep here.
How soon will the sheriff and you be able to judge that this change is having the needed impact, or the desired impact of being a good recruit? Are we already seeing signs of it as he's out recruiting law enforcement to say, hey, coming in 27, we've got this?
Well, but it's not just that. It's the fact that we've really increased salaries quite a bit. So he believes it's going to have an immediate impact. We'll see. We'll see how long it takes us to recruit and get all those officers in place. Because sometimes it's a process that takes quite a bit of time. But he is very hopeful that it's going to be something that will be an immediate impact.
It's 9:08, now coming up on 9:09. Jacksonville Mayor Donna Deegan joining us in studio. Rich Jones, Christine Bellino, Benjamin Fritkus here as well. For those who aren't natives of Jacksonville or have lived here long enough, the Jacksonville Journey, you may remember, was a pretty significant venture under former Mayor John Payton, which was really focused around trying to swarm the issue of crime from a number of different angles.
Yes.
And if you were with us on the mayoral campaign trail last year with you and ultimately Daniel Davis talking about the need to reinvigorate or bring back some of those crime prevention sort of tools, is a rebooted Journey in this budget?
Yes.
And if not, how does it go forward over the next year and year plus?
Yeah, it is. We filed legislation on that, and it is in this year's budget. But it is we are creating that with existing funds. So we were able to find existing funds that through other processes that we can invest in that to get that started. And that's a partnership with the sheriff. It's a partnership with other agencies that work on crime prevention. I think, you know, a lot of it is just making sure that every one of the stakeholders that really has can bring to bear some solutions here are engaged in the process. And so I'm excited about getting that started. It took a little while. You know, as you remember, Lakeisha Burton was with us at first and ended up having to step down because her husband Greg had some health challenges. We brought in Charles Griggs and he picked up where Lakeisha left off. And so we're just now getting that legislation going.
Approximately how much is it going to be? Back in the day under the Peyton administration, it was $30 million. These days, $30 million isn't going to be $30 million.
Well, but for the process of this year, we're looking at $4 million. It is going to be a process to ramp up. But there's no sense in allocating more money than we can spend at this particular time in terms of getting everything set up. We're going to set up a board. There needs to be accountability measures built in, you know. So it's all a process. This year it's going to be $4 million.
And so for those again who might not be familiar, the journey included a number of different things from education and other sorts of programs and projects. What's the vision there for this year, and what's your ultimate goal for that by the end of your first term?
Well, look, I think we started that process, whether you want to call it journey or not. We started that process with our literacy initiative, which has been wildly successful, as you know. We're about to cross 1.5 million minutes read.
Holy
we started
cow.
Off with a goal of 300,000 minutes, increased it to a million, and now we're at 1.5 million, about to pass that. So I don't even know what to do to incentivize people. I mean, it's fantastic. So, but as we know, 70% of the folks in our jails do not read at that third grade level that we need folks to have that reading proficiency at. So we know that to be able to have better literacy will create less folks that are having difficulties with our criminal justice system. So that's one part. But you know, some of the things that you know we've talked about is just more presence, you know, in the neighborhoods. That's one of the things that made the journey so you invested a lot more in police back then. That there was a big investment in community policing. In partnership with a lot of the groups that are doing work in the communities, and the sheriff is already doing some of that, but this will be a really focused effort. So I think it's going to be a great partnership.
Not a budget question, but you mentioned the sheriff when we were talking about a little bit off the air. How has your relationship evolved with him? I mean, he wasn't a proponent of yours on the campaign trail, but you both said we're going to work together. How has that relationship developed?
Listen, I have a great relationship with the sheriff. I appreciate all the things that he's trying to do in terms of transparency. I think when you talk to folks on the streets, I think it's the number one thing that they want to see from their government. They want to see more transparency. And I think he's taken a lot of steps toward that. He's spending a lot of time in the community. We have a good relationship. I think we both are very focused on making sure that, you know, it's great to see those homicide numbers coming down. We want to keep that happening, but we want to make sure that everybody feels safe in this community. And our next thing that we're going to be looking at is, you know, how do we collaborate on this new homelessness initiative? Because there's a new law going into effect in October that means that it's going to be illegal for folks to sleep on the streets. So we're going to try to create, or we aren't going to try, we have created, we're going to roll it out in a couple of weeks, a plan to try to make sure that that's not a big law enforcement issue.
So while not giving away the entirety of the plan, and Christine's going to weigh in just a second too, but since we're on the topic, it would involve about $10 million, as I understand it, from the city, and then some other money from external sources.
Yeah, what
will it look like? Big picture, I guess.
Well, it's a $15 million initiative. $10 million is coming in from the city this year. And this is absolutely necessary because we have to comply with that law or we could face a lawsuit. So what we did last year is I spent a lot of time talking with some folks that created a project called the Karma Project in Reno, Nevada. And it's basically the idea behind it is you take people who have been in homelessness and make sure that they have the opportunity to work with the folks who are trying to make sure that they can speak to people who are living on the streets. Because a lot of times there's distrust there. And to help those people understand, okay, now we're going to create services for you. So it's about creating housing, because we weren't excited about doing a tent city. I want people to be able to live with some dignity. So we are working toward various forms of housing, wraparound services, mental health services, other services that will help get people into the workforce once they've been able to establish themselves, you know, that they don't have other issues to work on, and then eventually to get them back out into society, those that we can. And the goal is to get to what we call functional zero. And that is, obviously, you're always going to have homeless people, but you want to make sure that you're getting as many people, you know, back off the streets as you can, and more than that are going back on the streets.
Mayor, two questions. One, the money that's taken from the general fund, if you could just explain to those who don't know how that money is replenished year after year. And then two, what are the pain points for you for this year's budget? What were you not able to accomplish that you were going to target for next year?
Well, first of all, in terms of the general fund, there's a target of having 10% of GSD, General Services District money, into that fund. At the last number I got of that, we were at 26%. So we have a very healthy general reserve. That money can be added to, or it can be subtracted from, but the goal is never go below 10%. So we're very healthy there. As far as the emergency reserves, that target is 7%, and we are also over that. So we're in good shape in terms of our reserves. Sorry, what was the other question?
The pain points for you for the budget, things that you know, we've talked about all the things that you're able to accomplish. What are some of the things that you weren't able to accomplish that you are going to target personally for next year?
Yeah, I was disappointed that we had to reduce the number of public service grant money, and also our money for arts and culture was reduced more than I would have liked. We really wanted to grow that budget because arts and culture has a 20-to-1, you know, return on investment. And so what I've told people this year is I've tried to very much focus on those things that have the greatest amount of return on investment for our citizens. Because the idea is, let's grow our revenues from every source that we can without raising taxes. And so that was disappointing to have to do that. I'm trying to think, what were some of the other things that let's see.
Is that because I saw in the budget that the money for grants was significantly lower than what was anticipated? Is that why that was cut?
It was cut because we had to cut $13 million out of the budget. And so we had to cut various projects or reduce various projects like those. Because we even reduced a little bit from the mowing budget, which I really hated to do because people have been so excited to see that, you know, more. It's not, we didn't cut a lot from mowing because we still think it's very important for people to have, you know, neighborhoods that are edged and mowed and all those. But that's another place where we had to take some money out. We had to turn down literally hundreds of projects, hundreds of very, very valuable, worthy projects. But you can't spend money that you don't have. But I really believe that with the processes we're putting in place, we're going to be in better shape next year.
At 9:17, I'm also reflecting on something that you had said a lot on the campaign trail, and you have said a lot throughout your year plus in office, is going to get more of the money from Tallahassee and especially Washington and bring it back. I don't know if you have a number per se, but are you satisfied with the process to date in bringing back some of that grant dollars, bringing back some of those for projects, and where are you at in the process of trying to expand that?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, the Emerald Trail grant alone of $147 million was probably, I don't know, 10 times greater than any grant we've ever gotten before. I mean, it's a great deal of money. I think in total we brought in more than $250 million in grants so far. We've got probably another 200 out there waiting to hear back on. And so we're working hard to bring down as much of that money as we can. What's great, Rich, is a lot of it, especially the resiliency money that's coming from D.C., doesn't require anything from us but to take the money and put it to good use. And that's always the best kind of federal grant to get when you don't – I mean, same with the Emerald Trail. There was nothing – well, with the Emerald Trail, we were already investing in the Emerald Trail. But in terms of the resiliency money, we just get to take that and put it to work for our citizens, and that's
Emerald
fantastic.
Trail just got another $1 million from Dolores and
Are
Wayne
they
Weaver.
Just the best? I mean, really, they're the loveliest people, and continuing to invest in our community. And I was really grateful that Mr. Weaver took the time to speak out very strongly about the community benefits agreement, part of which, as you know, was passed, which was to fund our riverfront parks. And the rest of it, we'll be discussing actually on the 23rd, I believe, is when that gets introduced again in council.
That'll be next week. Is that $94 million in this year's budget plan for those who don't follow the budget process? Where does that fall in terms of?
No, that's actually something that will be up for discussion. But the idea is to spread it out over a few years and not to start until I want to say next fiscal or the fiscal after that. to line up with the Jaguars lease, really. But in terms of the time period, that's what we're going to be discussing. But the things that we want to invest in are the same things that we've invested in, you know, to date. We think affordable housing is incredibly important. We think the East Side is incredibly important because it's so impacted by what's happening at the stadium. And it's one of those communities that has been, you know, historically disinvested in, you know. So it's really important that we focus on those things. Workforce development. We have so much construction and other work going on in our city now, and we need the workforce to keep up with that. Right now we don't have it, so it costs us a lot of money to bring in workforce from other places. So workforce development is critically important. Homelessness initiatives, extraordinarily important. So we'll be talking about all those things in the coming weeks.
We're visiting with Jacksonville Mayor Donna Deegan on a special hour of Jacksonville's Morning News. It's 9:20, and we appreciate your opportunity to, or your availability of coming in and answering a number of budgetary questions. You have Health Jacksonville building improvements, $38 million, and that comes on top of other funding that has to go into UF Health as well. Why is that such an important investment in our community?
Listen, UF Health is a jewel for us. It is the only trauma one center that we have, but also it is where every single one of our most vulnerable citizens goes for medical treatment, where a lot of folks from our jail go for medical treatment, where a lot of folks who can't pay for services go for medical treatment. Every hospital in this city sends their folks that are underserved to UF Health. And so we have to make sure that we can provide for those folks. It's really important. It's our only safety net hospital. So they are, if you've ever been over there, and Rich, if you haven't, I suggest that you take a tour. That hospital is so overburdened right now that we have got to put some resources into it to make sure they can continue to operate and they can continue to provide that amazing service that they provide.
And I think that's a $38 million building improvement.
$38 million building improvement, and then we invested about $60 million, between $56 million and then another $4 million in terms of providing them their own transport. That would save them about $4 million a year. That investment will pay many dividends because it'll keep a lot of people, out of the emergency rooms.
Parks obviously are a big investment. We talked about parks investment as part and park spending as part of the Jaguars deal and more. But the other move that's happening is the relocation of the fairgrounds out toward the far west side. Yep. And ultimately, where does that whole process stand? Because it's almost like this game of like you've got all these different moving parts at the same time. And is that reflected in this year's budget or is that further down?
No, it is reflected in this year's budget. There are a number of things in this year's budget that are things that we have promised to do and things that we needed to fund because that move is going to be necessary. So that is reflected in this year's budget.
Okay. And so to remind everyone where that's at, that requires or that has the fairgrounds moving out to the equestrian center
that's
location.
Right.
So
that's
it's paying
right.
for that process?
Yes.
Okay. And then the Jaguars or Iguana investment ultimately takes over the ownership of the land.
That's correct.
And are we done in understanding about the investment in a school there? Is that where are we at in that process overall with UF?
The UF? Yeah. We're still moving forward. Right now we are waiting to hear from them what location they would prefer. They're looking at sounds like they've narrowed it down to a couple of locations, either the fairgrounds location or the old fairgrounds, not the new fairgrounds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The old fairgrounds location.
That'd be
or
a different kind
yeah,
of circus.
Right. That'd be yes, it would. Or an area over closer to the Prime Osborne. So we're still looking at that, but absolutely all that is still moving forward. And I think we are in a very strong position to get the Semiconductor Institute as well. So that may be on the UF campus, it may be near the UF campus, but all that's gonna happen.
Semiconductor, for those who may not be aware of it, what's that? Semiconductor Institute.
Well, the CHIPS Act for Congress would provide us hundreds of millions of dollars to create chips, and the Semiconductor Institute would basically train people. It's another educational opportunity for us. Train people to do that work. So it's incredibly important for us, you know, in terms of an economic development tool. To be able to attract that, because not only is that $80 million from the state, but it's hundreds of millions of dollars from the federal government to make that go. And then it provides our citizens with an opportunity, a big opportunity, to be able to to be in an industry that is really the industry of the future.
As we are wrapping up, some of the not-so-sexy parts of government are really the essentials of government, which
yes.
is like streets and mowing and construction and maintenance and stuff like that. What are you most satisfied with in terms of what you're presenting in terms of the spending proposal for either street resurfacing or those kinds of things that, again, are essential government
functions?
Well,
listen, we met all of our targets that way. Even with this year's budget, we met all the targets that we have for all those things that we want to do in terms of infrastructure. And as you know, Rich, you know, it's probably one of the things we talked about most when I came in. If you build it, they will come. That's what I believe. You got to get that infrastructure piece right. That's why the Riverfront Park's infrastructure has been so important and why we're so excited to have that in place. But all those things are incredibly important. I told the team yesterday, I said, we need a hashtag make infrastructure sexy again or something, you know, because people need to understand.
It's a long hashtag.
It's a long hashtag, but my point is, it is probably the most important thing we do. And so it was incredibly important to me in this budget, not only to invest in those communities that have been left behind, but to make sure overall our city's infrastructure, that we keep up with it and that we are continuing to make the repairs and advancements that we need. We cannot expect to have a city that functions properly without having proper infrastructure. And so we've allowed that to crumble some over the years. We just cannot continue to do that and be a successful city.
What do you think will be ultimately the vulnerable targets that members of City Council are going to scrutinize over the coming weeks? Are you already prepared for those things?
You know, honestly, I'm hearing, and look, that's their job, right? They're going to look at the budget. They're going to see what they think about it. But at the end of the day, it's a pretty darn lean budget. I mean, there's not any bells and whistles in this budget. So they're certainly welcome to take it apart and look at it, but I don't really know what they're going to get rid of out of this budget if they do. It is a very tight budget, and I would hate to see us in this city, as we talked about at the very top of this segment, I would hate to see us go backwards, because that is, as I said the other day, it is thinking small that has kept us in mediocrity. We have got to lean in. We have to absolutely look at ways we can lean down in city government, but we also have to lean into making sure that we are providing what we need for our city to have a return on the investment. And if you don't invest, there will be no return.
As we wrap up our conversation with Jacksonville Mayor Donna Deegan, approaching the bottom of the hour, we're about to get a You Decide 2024 update from the Republican National Convention. You weighed in over the weekend about the assassination attempt, political violence in general. How does the city work with law enforcement to ensure that politicians, that everyone is as safe as they can be, whether we see former President Trump come to Jacksonville, President Biden, Kamala Harris, J.D. Vance, or others coming to Jacksonville? What's the effort there to prevent political violence from happening again?
Well, listen, it starts with having some mutual respect for each other. I mean, and I know that sounds, I don't know, I don't care how it sounds. You know, I talk about love and unity a lot, and I think that it is a very underutilized resource, and yet one that we have total control over in our community if we will simply, as I've said so many times, take the time to see each other's humanity and respect each other. It doesn't mean we have to agree. We can still disagree. We can still be passionate in our disagreement, but it doesn't mean we have to hate. And I think that will, if we can take that temperature down in Jacksonville and we can have that city where we all give each other mutual respect in this process, I'm hopeful that we can be a great example for the rest of the country. I think we have been in large part, and I'd like for us to keep going in that direction. We cannot, you know, control what everybody says, but here I hope we can have some mutual love and respect for each other.
In about 35 days, we'll see you at the 10th annual Carathon,
yes.
presented by Duval Asphalt. It's the 30th
year.
Are
we already back?
Yes.
My goodness, it's
and you know
been a
we're
fast
expanding
year, right?
To 2 days this year.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it's the 10th Carathon. We got a big honking goal.
Have
so
you
we'll
invested
you.
In a lot of cough drops and you gargling salt water
I'm
and all that
doing
good
those
stuff?
Things and
okay.
catching up on sleep in advance of that 36-hour broadcast. But we'll see you down there in 35
Great.
Days.
I'll
Jacksonville Mayor Donna
it.
Deegan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
Rich. Do appreciate it. We'll pause there as Jacksonville's morning news continues.